Well, as I said, I've had the pleasure before of hearing our next speaker, Alan. You're in for a wonderful treat. And in between the laughs, there's a real, genuine pearls of wisdom. Alan?
First, I would like to express my thanks to Tom and to everyone concerned with this roundup for the kindness of their invitation in including me in this wonderful gathering, for the pleasure of renewing old friendships, and for the inspiration of that talk of Millie's. That was terrific. Both Pete and Millie made some passing references to the suicide kick that the alcoholic goes off on once in a while. And I heard one the other night from a buddy of mine that was a beaut. Toward the end of his drinking career, he was cornered in his kitchen by his wife and his mother. And they were berating him from one side to the other. And with typical alcoholic dramatics, he jumped up, flung open the oven door, turned on the gas, and stuck his head in. His mother jumped up on one side and his wife on the other, and they shoved it in further and held it there. This is one way of coming into AA if you last. My name is and I'm an alcoholic. And in the beginning, at least, I was a working drunk. Not because I was a career man. I had no income, no annuities, no rich relations, but I had a thirst. And in order to drink, I had to have money. And in order to get money, I had to suffer the indignities of labor. And I always found myself in positions that were very much beneath my dignity. I was always subject to the supervision of people whom I regarded as intellectual peasants. I considered the period Monday through Friday a very unpleasant interlude between drinking. But inevitably, Friday would arrive. And about noontime Friday, I would begin to experience a very pleasant glow of anticipation. I hadn't had a drink yet, but already I was beginning to fly. And I would force myself semi-hysterically through those last 4 hours of Friday. And then finally 4:30, the blessed time. Here I face the weekend. And it's amazing how for the alcoholic, when he views a weekend prospectively from Friday, what an interminable period in time this is. Here I am, my own boss. Nobody can push me around. And I have money. This is indeed the best of all possible worlds. So I would take myself home. I would go through the motions of having dinner. And immediately thereafter, I would get meticulously attired. And in all my sartorial elegance, I would walk 2 blocks, turn in at the local gin mill, ascend a stool, and give forth with the erudition. Usually on my left hand was the local garbage collector. On my right hand, the neighborhood Iceman. In the middle, Einstein. There was no subject on which I was not an expert. And the conversations were tremendous, stimulating, all-encompassing. And very quickly, they progressed to the place where everybody talked, nobody listened, nobody gave a damn. Then all too quickly, at least for me, came that inevitable time. The guy who owned the joint wanted to go home. And there would then ensue for me the inevitable argument. One for the road. This I insist upon. This I need like a hole in the head. This I would get. And I would take myself very unsteadily home, crawl up the stairs, into the sack, and collapse. And there would then follow 4 or 5 hours of alcoholic stupor, and then I would awaken Saturday morning, sick, bad taste, butterflies in the stomach, but an awareness. This is Saturday. All right, so you're a little sick, but the joints are still open. You still have money. So this morning, luxuriate in your misery. And we would stretch out for an additional hour. And then we would arrive. And once again, meticulously attired, 2 blocks, same stool, same characters, same conversation, same results. 2 p.m., stiff. 2:30 p.m., back in a sack, unconscious. 5 p.m., awake, sick. But it's still Saturday. Don't worry, double header today. Right back again, 2 blocks, same stool, all things the same. 3 a.m. Sunday, same bartender, same argument, one for the road. 3:30, crawl up the same stairs, back in the sack, collapse. 4 or 5 hours, alcoholic stupor. Then it's Sunday morning. Awake. Sick. No butterflies this morning. Eagles this morning. Also an awareness. This is Sunday. Tomorrow is Monday. This long weekend has telescoped. Tomorrow we must earn the daily bread. Tomorrow we must hit the ball. And we know the string is running out. We can feel the hot breath on the neck. How many grandparents can you bury? How many attacks of spastic colitis can you have all week Monday? We know that the job is slipping and we need the job and we want to keep the job. But right now we have the immediate problem. We are sick. But we are also intelligent. All alcoholics are geniuses. So we use this. We shall program this day. Point one, recover. This we know how to do. Be home at 2 p.m. Stay home. Don't go out tonight. Back to bed early. 8 hours sleep. Tomorrow morning, on your feet, hit the ball. No hits, no runs, no errors. This is the program for today. And we arrive. And we sally forth and we execute point one brilliantly. By 2 p.m., blind. By 2:30 p.m., back in the sack, unconscious. By 5 p.m., awake, suffering. But we remember the resolve of this morning. We are further aware of the closer proximity of Monday. And we want to keep this resolve. And we begin to prowl from room to room like a caged tiger. And the perspiration begins to flow. And the nerves begin to dance. And then finally we throw up the hands and we say, who the hell am I kidding? If I put my head down on the pillow tonight, it will explode. Just a few beers. So I can sleep. And back to the same stool. And again, all things the same. And then at 2 a.m. Monday, same bartender, same argument, one for the road. 2:30 p.m., back in the sack, unconscious. And then it's Monday. And I'm going to die. Sit on the edge of the bed. The head between the hands and the perspiration cascading down the face. Every nerve is quivering and the self-loathing begins. What kind of a fool are you? Why must you always stay until the last shot is fired? Oh, God. The only time we communicate with deity, Monday morning. The little woman stands over the bed and she shakes her head from side to side in perplexity. And you say, please, not this morning. Leave me alone. And then with terrific effort, we drag the quivering wreck from the soggy bed. We stumble into our clothes and we aim ourselves in the direction of employment. And every step is purgatory. And finally, at long last, we get to the entrance of the place of employment. And we stumble through the gate. And here comes the normal one. Good morning. Kill him. We stumble into an office and grope our way up to a desk. And at random, we select a nondescript piece of correspondence. And for 8 hours, we carry it like a banner. From office to office. Please, God, don't let anybody ask me any questions that require an intelligent answer today. Please, God, make it be 4:30, quick. This is prayer. And finally, at long last, the blessed time, 4:30 arrives. And the wounded warrior returns home. And the little woman said, how did it go? He said, please. Just let me die. And back into the sack. And twice that night, the sheets come off the bed. We're bathed in our own perspiration. And then finally, it's Tuesday. And it's not much better. And for 8 hours more, we cheat, chisel, and connive our way through the boss's time. And back home and right back into the sack. And then it's Wednesday. And about 8:30 a.m. Wednesday, we have the first manifestations of health returning. Because right about here, we begin to notice around us the existence of certain small inefficiencies in the corporation. And Wednesday night, returning home, we have the semblance of a spring in the step. And we announce to the little woman, tonight the master is taking sustenance. Let me have a bouillon cube and a cup of hot water. Then it's Thursday. And by 9 a.m. Thursday, we're convinced of one thing. The entire population of this corporation, save one imbecile. You have to show them how to do everything. Move over. Thursday night, we demand lamb chops broiled. And then it's Friday. And it's noontime. And here's that feeling again. And it's 4:30. Here's that weekend again. And here's money. And we're on our way home. But we are not completely insensible people. We have a vivid recollection of the week that has just concluded. We are aware of the small kindnesses extended by the little woman. Not such a bad state. She didn't use the spurs too hard this week. But there's a gnawing realization way back here. I got to get out. But we'll worry about that later. And into the house we come. And it's immaculate. And the kids are scrubbed and shiny. A nice dinner on the table. And even the wife looks pretty good. All the wrong ingredients. So being alcoholic, we go on the prowl. From room to room. And ultimately, we discover one household chore that did not get attention that day. And we say to the little woman, what happened? And more than likely, her answer is, I was busy. And then we go into the act. Say, you were busy. Did you see me, a dying man, leave this house every morning this week to keep a roof over your head? And you can't take care of a simple detail like this? This type of needling eventually evokes a response. And the minute she answered me back, she was dead. You don't appreciate me. Out. And we're heading right back to the stool. But right about here, a very interesting conflict begins to manifest itself. On one level of the alleged intelligence, we had just put over a sharp deal. Nice going. But on another level, somewhere down in here, there's a little voice that intrudes itself. And it says, she did not deserve it, and you know it, you phony bum. But this voice I can't listen to now. Let me get back to the stool. Let me have a few, and I'll figure out a way to square it later. Also, we have a vivid recollection of Monday that has just gone by. Don't let that happen again. Just stick to beer. Get out of that joint at a reasonable hour. You can do it. Watch it. And the weekend begins. And the weekend goes by. And again, it's Monday. And it's different. It's worse. This is my case history. Except as with every practicing alcoholic, it got progressively worse. And it progressed to the place where no longer was it possible to make it on Monday. No longer possible to make it Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then the escape department into the service, out of the service. 1945, I stand before His Honor. Like every practicing alcoholic, ultimately, to put it charitably, I was placed under supervision. The Bastille. And out of this encounter, I hear my first reference to Alcoholics Anonymous. His Honor. He looked me over. He said, well, I see you're a veteran. I had the ruptured duct, at least it were at the time. He said, you're a young punk. If I were you, I would contact Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, yes, sir. And here I thought, you should drop dead. But regardless, I went to the Bastille, and I did not care for the cuisine, the accommodations, or the association. I wanted out. So I wrote a letter. And nothing happened. Finally, my good wife relented. She got me released on my second son's birthday. And I went to live in the home of my parents. My father's a retired policeman. Not too sympathetic. And I spent my time sitting across the room. He spent his time glaring at me. And finally, here comes a knock at the door, and there's a guy, and he holds up the letter. Did you write this? I said, yes, but who needs you now? I'm out. But he was an insistent character, and eventually he wore me down, and I went to my first AA meeting. Primarily to get out from under the baleful glance of my father. And here I received my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. The only ingredient I had, quiet desperation. I had no home, I had no job, I had no help, I had no money, I had no friends, I had no self-respect, I had no prospect, I had nothing. And if this hooper wanted to take me in his car at his expense, why not? It's a night out. And I sat and I listened to speakers. And every time they split an infinitive, I was wounded. I had the supreme arrogance of the Irish alcoholic. But this arrogance worked in my favor because I evaluated the mental caliber of the protagonists here. And I figured if these hoopoes can stay sober with this mumbo jumbo, for me it's got to be a cinch. So on the basis of a challenge, I said, I'll show them. And I continued to go to meetings. This challenge motivation was perfect for me because I did one thing right. I didn't drink. For all the wrong reasons, but I didn't drink. And days became weeks, and weeks became months. And my wife said, whatever the hell it is, keep doing it. Finally, 6 months. And I still hadn't had a drink. And one of those situations developed where there was a meeting scheduled and the visiting group didn't show up. And we had a frantic chairman galloping around the room. Have to rig a meeting. And he turned to me and said, how long you been sober? I said, 6 months. He said, talk. This is not the way to approach an alcoholic. I said nothing, and since I was the novice, when the meeting began, I was speaker number one. When I got up on my feet, I said, "My name is Alan, and I am an alcoholic. This is important. This is the first public admission." Why not? Didn't cost me a nickel. I had seen others do it. Why not me? This was an admission for their benefit. I said, "I am an alcoholic. I've been coming around here for 6 months. I've been listening to Peace of Mind and Serenity until I'm left-handed. Where the hell is it?" And then I sat down. This was the quietest room in New Jersey. When that meeting was over, I was surrounded. And one very casual little guy, my friend Margaret Brothers remembers him, a guy named Grant, came sauntering up to me and he said, "Come here, hotshot." He said, "I have observed you for 6 months, and I do believe that you have been sober. And I have seen you here every week." He said, "Now, apparently from those few little gems that you gave out with tonight, during this period, some things have been troubling you." "Yes." He said, "One question. Why the hell didn't you say something about it?" This is a fair question. And I didn't have an answer. And I'd rather be found dead. I went back home that night and I went to bed and I tossed and I turned and I went through that Danny Thomas routine. I should have said nothing. The guy was right. So next week I went back and I selected the better member, small nucleus of the intelligentsia, to whom I will occasionally unburden myself. This is progress. And time continues, and I don't drink. And by virtue of the simple process of not taking alcohol, things begin to happen of their own volition. I stop shaking. I stop sweating. I begin to eat a little. Doesn't look like it, but I do. I get a job. I get a suit, coat, and pants match. I get a dollar. I begin to bring my head up, and I like this feeling. More importantly, I begin to listen not so critically. And I begin to recognize that these taste histories to which I'm being exposed week after week after week are nothing more or less than the simple projection of the basic symptoms of alcoholism. And I have to admit that if these are the symptoms of alcoholism, these are my symptoms, so I must be an alcoholic. Now I have progressed from this qualified admission for their benefit to a reluctant acceptance of the label. All right, I'll buy it. I'm an alcoholic. I'll buy it for now. But arrogance is far from dead. Give me a year. Give me one solid year without a drink. Give me this year to repair my financial fences. Give me this year to become revitalized physically, spiritually, economically, emotionally. Give me a year to get back into the business world. Plus the knowledge that I have gained by my association with these characters, and I'll show them. But I have accepted temporarily the label. and time goes by. 7, 8, 9 months. And I get to know more and more people. And I begin to observe the very unhappy experiment department. This is something to watch. Let's, for the sake of illustration, take everyone I knew in those days who had trouble. And let's call them collectively John Doe alcoholic. And I looked at this collective John Doe alcoholic, and I measured me against him. So let's look at John Doe from the physical aspect. How big is he? 6'3", 245 pounds. 6'2", 145 pounds. So here we have obvious superiority in the physical department. Let's look at John Doe alcoholic from the educational standpoint. College, yep. University, 2. Degrees, 3. School period, end of quote. Here also we have obvious superiority. Let's look at John Doe collective alcoholics from the standpoint of overall productivity. Does he own his own home? 11 rooms, 3 baths. Garage. Does he have an automobile? 2. I haven't got a pogo stick. Let's look at John Doe from the standpoint of AA. How long? 3 years. Let's explode collective John Doe to his component parts. Jim, Shag, Charlie, Willie. This was in 1946. Never once did I observe the successful experiment. Everyone ended disastrously. And when I measured these guys against me with their obvious superiority in every department, I began to wonder, is a year going to be enough? Now I've progressed to the point of conviction. This means me for keeps, and I don't like it. Here I am, age 33, and I love those neon signs. I got a lot of mileage left. Why does this have to happen to me? And I moaned and I groaned. And finally, here comes my little casual buddy. Come here, hot shot. Said, I'm listening to you. Said, you sound like a wounded moose. But I've listened to this admission and acceptance and conviction thing, but you're always crying. You said there's another word. Requires some attention. So what is this? He said surrender. Now I had him. So I turn on my tormentor. I said, wait a minute, boy. When I came in and you guys said you take what you want, you don't have to do anything. Is this true? Yes, this is true. I said, now when you tell me that I have to surrender to this logical mind, this implies I must surrender to something. And to me, this sounds like the tambourine. And I ain't going to buy it. That I've got a year, haven't I, on my basis? Who the hell says I gotta be happy? Only an alcoholic could construct a gem of logic like this. But this cookie was a smart cookie because he said, okay, kid, have it your own way, but keep coming. But in addition to this casual counselor, I also had a sponsor. This man was the soul of patience and kindness. With me, he had to be. And at about this stage of my development, suddenly it seemed every weekend, here comes the little Chevrolet chugging into my driveway. And old John would say, come on. I said, where am I going? He said, what's the difference? You got nothing else to do. Get in. And on the first occasion, we took off for a neighboring town, pulled up to a house, knocked on the door. Here comes a woman, and she looked at me. She turns to my sponsor, said, oh, you from AA? I said, that's right. She said, well, it's upstairs. I ascend the stairs with John. I don't know what I'm getting into until we open the bedroom door, and then I know. For here lies the pigeon. He's shaking, the bed shaking, the room shaking. Old John says to me, go sit in the corner, be quiet. John sits next to the pigeon and he begins to talk, not about the pigeon, but about John. The way he drank, the way he connived, the way he schemed, what happened, how he got into AA. And as John is talking to this character, it's amazing to observe. The bed begins to quiet down. And the guy begins nodding his head. Yeah, me. And I'm fascinated. Figure this guy, John's a magician. He's got to be. Finally, John puts it to him, $64 question. You want to quit? Yep. When? Now? Let's go. Bingo. Meeting. In the space of a few short weeks, this horizontal character is a man. And I like him. And I'm amazed by the prowess of John. And it seems like every week we're off, pigeons here, pigeons there. I'm along Supercargo, going to the corner, sit down, shut up. Finally, when I get to that place of material affluence, we now have a four-party telephone. And it's day, it rings, pick up the phone, and here's my friend John on the other end. Said, Alan, there's a guy over in Kingsburg who wants help. This is a nearby community. I say, yeah, where are you going? He said, well, I tell you, I can't make it. Well, I know what's coming. I said, well, that's tough. It's too bad I can't help you, John, because I haven't got a car. He said, well, where I'm going, I'm not going to use the iron lung. This is the old Chevy. He said, suppose you take it. Now, my first emotion is panic. I don't want any part of this deal. Who is this clown in Kingsburg? I never saw him. He never saw me. Why should I drop dead for him? I don't want to go. But something else intrudes itself here. This is my sponsor, John, who has been nothing but the soul of kindness, patience, and tolerance with me. And this is the first request he has ever made of me. And how can I, in good conscience, refuse John? This is development. So finally I say, well, what do you think? Can I handle it? He says, sure, take the iron lung, go. So here we go. Pull up to a house, knock on the door, prototype, same woman. Said, AA, yes, ma'am, it's upstairs, now I got it. Walk in, same picture, horizontal, shake. Now I got to start. What am I going to tell this character? Well, I saw John operate. John used to tell him about John. This guy gets jacked. If he kills him, he gets jacked. So I told him, this is the way I drank. This is the way I operated. This is what happened to me. And in the right places, I'm getting the right responses. This is terrific. I get a warm feeling in here. I like this guy. This guy could say if I gotta kill him. So we pour it on. Finally, we get him to the strategic point. You want to quit? Yep, when? Now, okay. Be ready. I'll be here Monday. Down the stairs we come, and his wife grabs me. Can I see you?
Yes, ma'am.
In the kitchen. 2-hour recitation I get of what a louse he is. This guy is completely out of business. He owes everybody. He's unemployable. He's just no place. And she said, what am I going to do? And I have the answer. Easy does it. What else can I tell? Finally, here comes the appointed night. I'm there early. He's there, vertical. Ambulatory, get in. Off we come to the meeting. We come through the door. And like a homing pigeon, he goes for last seat, last row. Tell him, up front. I don't want you to miss anything. Up we come, we sit together, first row. Meeting starts. Speakers get up, and they say everything wrong. Here I sit next to my pigeon. I want this guy to get AA. Come on, get going. Get off the travelogue, get on to AA. I'm sweating blood. And I turn to look at my pigeon, he's like a rock. What's this picture all about? Here I sit with a guy I've seen once before. But about this guy, I know everything. His wife told me. Here I sit intensely interested in this man for his sake. This is the first division of concentration on self in a lifetime. Here I sit intensely interested in another human being. And from this relationship, I can't make a nickel. He hasn't got it. But this relationship is real. It's valid. You can see it. We are here together. This human relationship of one alcoholic for the other, completely devoid of any material aspect. Yet it exists. You can see it. So when you take the material out of something and it's still there, what's left? Here is the rampant atheist. Here is the militant agnostic. Here is the guy who was embarrassed by God references. And here he sits engaged in the practice of spirituality and too damn dumb to know it. These things I recite only in the interest of the individual who might be sitting here tonight, who is apprehensive about not understanding what is entailed in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't worry about it. Just come in as I did. and go through the motions. Do what is suggested. Don't drink. Continue to make these meetings. Get to know some of the people. And you will discover a progression in Alcoholics Anonymous as there was progression in your alcoholism. And those things that confuse, perplex, and bewilder you will clear up. You only have to do one thing. Don't take one drink this day. And keep coming to these meetings. Place your faith in people first if necessary. Ultimately, you will find that you can place your faith in God. This is your own selection. One day at a time, one drink, one friend, one belief, one faith, one life restored.
The Australian College of Recorded Education proudly presents for your instruction and pleasure a famous, successful, and happy Australian, Mr. Reuben F. Scarfe. Many honours have been bestowed upon Mr. Scarfe, including an OBE from Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, also a papal knighthood of the Order of St. Gregory the Great. This rare combination has been received by less than a dozen people in Australia. Some of Mr. Scarfe's academic qualifications include a Fellow of the Australian Institute of Management and a Fellow of the Australian Institute of Commerce and Industry. Mr. Scarfe's reputation as an industrialist and a philanthropist does not need detailing. He has become a legend in his own lifetime. Presenting Mr. Reuben F. Scarfe.
45 years ago, I was going broke. Everything I touched seemed to go wrong. I had a bad attack of G-itis. You'll hear about that later. But I was given a formula that was the beginning of an unbroken chain of successes. I was able to raise my sights so as to prepare for opportunities and grasp them as they came my way. Look, there may be many, many formulas to success, but I don't know many formulas. All I know is this one, and it has worked for me and for everybody else who has used it. Today can be the beginning of your life, and I'm going to share with you some of the discoveries that I have made whilst using this formula. There are rules and regulations that are so easy. As a matter of fact, they are as easy as A, B, C. It is important to have a goal, an aiming point. For there is gold in goals. You must have a goal, because without a goal, you cannot reach a goal. You must be a person of a single objective. You must be one single-minded about what you are doing. And if you use the ABC formula, there is nothing can stop you achieving whatever you require. Now, I said ABC. A is for accurate knowledge. What is accurate knowledge? Accurate knowledge is knowing your job, setting goals, and knowing the time and work necessary to achieve it. Accurate knowledge is knowing the what and the how. Look, each day we live, we form the future of our life. The acts that we say today will produce the harvests for tomorrow's reapings. Good acts, good results. Bad acts, bad results. No acts, no results. It's as easy and as simple as that. But we must know the seeds we are sowing, because they're going to come up exactly what we sow, irrespective of what we think. Look, it does not matter who is right. It matters what is right. Because man's mind is like a parachute, and it first must be opened in order to work. And unless our mind is open, we can miss a chance. We can miss an idea. With prejudice and pride, we can stop things coming our way. It's so important. I said A is for accurate knowledge. Now B is for better attitudes. I think love and self-love could summarize attitude. Now, if you become a victim of the wrong attitude, I mentioned at the beginning of this talk about G-itis. Grog, gambling, and girls. Let's classify girls as excess or illicit sex. And for girls, it could be grog, gambling, and guys. Now, I think that attitude could be formulated by saying that if you can become enslaved by grog or gambling or girls, you can work yourself into a corner. And you can find that instead of you being master of your life, you become the victims of your habits. And I think that's pretty well manifest in the Alcoholics Anonymous movement or the Grey movement for the mentally sick. All they're trying to do is unravel the riddle, unravel the complexities of people's indulgences. And once they free them, you'll find they then have a free life. If you want to see how this attitude works, the next time you're in your car, go into a dark back street. Turn your headlights off and your cabin lights on, and look, you'll find you've contained yourself in a little world as big as the cabin of your car. And you'll only see what is in the cabin, and you'll only see yourself. But if you turn your cabin light off and your headlights on, then you'll find your entire way is illuminated. There's a story told about a drunk who was in a pub and he got himself full of grog. And he decided to go out to his car to go home. But within 5 minutes he was back. And he said to his friends, he said, look, do you know that some so-and-so stole my clutch, my brake, my steering gear and my dashboard? Now, needless to say, a burglary like that would attract some attention. And they all went out to the car to see what had happened. And they found that he had been sitting in the back seat. He had been sitting in the back seat. And that's what happens to us when we become excessively indulged or captured or overwhelmed with grog or gambling or illicit or excess sex. We work ourselves into a corner. But once we find the secret of overcoming it for the right attitude, instead of self-love, of love, you'll find we then become master of our fate and captains of our life. It's a matter of preparation meeting opportunity. Look, if you are not prepared for opportunity and it comes your way, you won't even know you've had it. It'll pass you by. But if you're half prepared and you take on something that is beyond you, it can make you look ridiculous. But if you're fully prepared, wonderful things can happen to you. Preparation meeting opportunity. I think it's a matter of look first to the work and the reward will follow. You must put the fuel on the fire first before you can expect the fire. Don't be like the man who said to the fire, look, you give me the heat and I'll put the fuel on after. It just doesn't work that way. You've got to put the fuel on first and then you get the fire. You've got to put the work in first and then you get the results. Now I said A is for accurate knowledge. Now B is for better attitudes. And C is for classification professional. Because in the hands of a professional, even the most difficult tasks look easy. You take the great athletes, such as golfers, tennis players, cricketers, footballers, and all our great Olympians. What have they got? First of all, they've had the right training. The right people show them the techniques and the methods that is necessary to become a champion or to become an expert in their field. Then they had a dedicated attitude of service. They loved what they were doing and they got into it because they wanted to do it. And they practiced the truths that were told to them by their coaches and their mentors. And they went from strength to strength, and eventually they became the world's best. And I think the same thing goes with everything that we do. If we have the accurate knowledge of what it's all about, the right attitude of service and not wanting it to serve us, and if we practice at that, the results will come because it's as easy as A, B, C. There is a key to achieve the results that you desire. The Alcoholics Anonymous have achieved miracles in the field of rehabilitation for the alcoholics, the people who have been captured and enslaved by alcohol. And they've been able to work their way up from the abyss, step by step, to the plateau where they are free men again. And using the Alcoholics formula, they say it's a cinch by the inch, it's hard by the yard, little by little, bit by bit. You don't have to do extraordinary things. All you do is ordinary things well, and keep on doing them. If you look back in history, the pyramids were built that way. Man has just achieved reaching the moon that way. And all the things between, the great successes, the great achievements, the accomplishments of man have all been achieved a cinch by the inch. This is so easy to do. You can rise yourself from the valley of mediocrity to anything that your heart desires. Application, accurate knowledge, the right attitude towards their work, and practice, practice, practice. Calvin Coolidge, one of the great American presidents, wrote, he said, "Nothing in this world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. It's perseverance and application alone that is omnipotent. A cinch by the inch." Norman Vincent Peale, who wrote that magnificent, famous book, The Power of Positive Thinking, he said, "Dedication, determination, discipline, and attitude is the secret." He said, "You must have a dream. You must build a ladder to your dream. You cannot go any higher than your dream. But with determination, discipline, dedication and attitude, you can certainly reach your dream." If you want to remember this cassette, play it many times. The first time, you will only remember about 5% of it. The key is, nothing can take the place of persistence, and it's a cinch by the inch. They all say, little by little, aim at your goal, one step at a time daily, and you can achieve it. And later on, I'm going to give you a formula of how you can do that with tremendous precision. Integrity. Integrity is essential in reaching a goal. Tell the truth. It is not only morally sound, but it is also good sense and good business. Do you know that a testimonial is so much more powerful than an advertisement will ever be? I'll give you an example. If two people got together and they told only one person a day for 30 days, and everybody told only one person for 30 days, now the 29th person would only have to tell one person. You listen to this figure. 1,047,000,000 plus would know. Look, just get the reputation of being an early riser and you can sleep until lunchtime. But you won't want to sleep until lunchtime because you sow an act, you reap a habit, you sow a habit, you reap a character, and you sow a character and you reap a destiny. You've formed yourself With accurate knowledge, the right attitude, and practice, 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 your life has become part of a pattern, and you move step by step towards that which you want. Look, it takes 100 degrees centigrade to boil water, 97 degrees will not boil water, and for the sake of 3 degrees, you can lose 97 degrees of effort. Much good work is lost for the want of a little extra work. They say in selling that most sales are made on the fifth call. And look, most achievements are made with perseverance. Preparation, meeting opportunity. Every day ask yourself, what extra can I contribute? Not how much more am I going to get? And if you have the giving attitude of contributing, you'll find you're placing yourself in an enviable position. Because people will want you, because people want things. And if you're giving, they will give you back what they have to get what you have. Adversity. Welcome adversity as a friend and an ally. For it polishes the metal of the wise and the strong, but it erodes the will of the weak and the self-indulgent. For hidden in adversity, deep down within it, is a pearl of great value. Because whilst you're unraveling the riddle, you are developing fortitude, you're gaining experience, and you are finding out the secrets that lay within that problem. And the next time you have the problem, you can do it with tremendous ease. Do you know that Walt Disney went broke 7 times and had 1 nervous breakdown before he succeeded? Winston Churchill had a stammer, a stutter. And in overcoming his voice impediment, he became the greatest orator of his generation. Welcome adversity, because within adversity is the disciplines and the key and the formula that makes you move forward. It's either use or lose. If you don't use your capacity, if you don't develop it, you'll lose it. And adversity gives you the opportunity to use your abilities. Remember, if your product or service is more valuable than the other person's money, they will wear a path to your door to give you their money. But if you think you can enrich yourself by deceiving others, you're only going to end up by deceiving yourself. It's as easy as that. Remember now that most goals are achieved with persistence. Much good work is lost for the want of a little extra work, and it takes 100 degrees centigrade to boil water. 97 degrees will not boil water. I said adversity. If you have no problems, you are either asleep or dead. Because life is made up of problems. The very essence of life, the struggle of life, is a forward, active, dynamic movement. If it's too easy, remember too, here's a point. Say if a thing is easy, everybody can do it, and then you've got real problems. The competition becomes so rough that you are really in trouble. You need to develop something with persistence, with initiative, with stick-attedness, that you've placed yourself in a position where you're offering a service or a product that the other person has not worked hard enough to achieve. Then people will pay you for it, and they'll come to you from everywhere to get it from you. A muscle is developed and maintained only with effort. It's use or lose. And diamonds are forged under extreme pressure. Problems. If you're having a problem, go and get one. Daily we are growing, or daily we are shrinking. Nothing in life is stationary. There is gold in goals. You must have a goal before you can reach a goal. But make sure it is a realistic, attainable goal. That is where accurate knowledge comes in. You can have a big goal, but divide it into steps. Then it becomes a cinch by the inch. Remember, you will become what you think about all day long. If you have a planned goal, there is nothing that will stop you reaching that goal. You must want that goal passionately, too. This is important. You must be afire with desire for that goal. Because fire is made up of the two facts, or the two elements, of light and of heat. Light is truth, and heat is enthusiasm. And if you have truth and enthusiasm, then your wonderful creative imagination will discover for you the answers, the secrets. And your subconscious mind will work 24 hours a day at finding out how to get to your goal and how to achieve what you desire. But here is a big point. Remember that achieving what you want to achieve takes 99% perspiration and 1% inspiration. We must daily work at what we're doing, because nothing comes without effort and work. Now we are coming up to one of the most important elements in this formula. I told you I'm going to tell you about my own story later. Now, faith is the key. Faith is essential. We must have faith in ourselves. We must have faith in our plan. And we must have faith in our God. But don't ever underestimate faith in God. I have discovered over many years the immense power that resides in this much neglected force. Look, you're going to have problems on your way to success or your way to achievement. But if you have God on your side, if you have that extra dimension, you'll find that the answers will come to you from external sources. Either you'll find it subconsciously, or somebody will come up and tell it to you, because you'll have somebody working with you. All history has demonstrated that there is an extra force that is available to us. But today, with our modern humanism and the pride of man, who has cut himself off from this tremendous power, and because of that, many of us have failed. Now, as I've said, you're going to have problems. And with God's help, hidden within the problem, you will find that pearl of priceless value. Every adversity carries within it the seed of an equal or greater opportunity. Now, I said I'm going to give you an idea that will give you the disciplines of how to go step by step, a cinch by the inch, towards your goal. Now, this is called the $25,000 idea. The story goes that there was a man called I.B. Lee, who was an efficiency expert, and he went up to Charles Schwab, who was the head man in the Bethlehem Steel Company of America, to sell him efficiency ideas. And Charles Schwab said, look, he said, we don't want any ideas, but if you can give us an idea to get action, we are interested. And Lee said to Schwab, he said, I'm going to give you an idea now. I'm going to leave it with you. Use it as long as you like. And when you're finished using it and you're satisfied with it, send us a check for whatever you think it's worth. And after 6 months, the Bethlehem Steel Company sent I.B. Lee's company a check for $25,000. And they said that this was the most important single idea to get action that they've ever had. And the Bethlehem Steel Company went on from strength to strength and became one of the world's greatest companies. Now, here is the idea. Every day, you write down the six most important jobs that you have to do. And you number them from 1 to 6 according to their importance. You start on number 1. You work through your list as far as you can go for that day. Now, say if you have done 4 jobs for the day. Well, next day you add another 4 jobs to bring it up to 6 again. Then you renumber them according to their importance for that day. And you'll find that you'll be doing all the most important things first. It's a cinch by the inch. As I said, that faith is essential. There was once a man walking along the edge of a cliff. He slipped and he fell over. And as he was hurtling down, he was able to catch a tree halfway down the cliff. And he looked down, and he saw 500 feet below him, and he looked up, and he saw 500 feet above him, and he started to pray. And he said, Lord, please help me. And he heard a voice. And the voice said to him, do you believe in me? He said, Lord, I do believe in you. And the voice said, do you trust in me? He said, Lord, I do trust in you. And the voice said, let go. And he looked down again, and he looked up again, and he said, Lord, is there anybody else up there I can talk to? Look, we must have faith. We must let go. Because in climbing the ladder of success, we must let go the lower rung in order to grasp the one above. Faith. Many people say that unless I see it, I won't believe in it. Then immediately they take a breath of air. And many people say, unless I understand it, I won't believe it. And then they turn on an electric switch, and they don't know as much about electricity and where the power comes from than a goat. We must have faith. We must believe. Now, I told you, I am going to tell you my story. 45 years ago, I was going broke. And a friend came up to me and said, look, you are in big trouble and you need help. And he said, I'm going to give you help. He said, what I want you to do is promise me you'll try it for 3 months and I'll guarantee it will work. And I said, what have I got to do? He said, you're a Catholic. He said, you get up and go to Mass and Communion every morning for 3 months and I'll guarantee that your life will change. And I said, like hell I will. He said, I'll tell you what I'll do with you. He said, I'll even improve on that. He said, I'll give you £100 if it doesn't work. But you must go the 3 months. And if you don't go the distance, you give me £10. And I worked it out that I was getting more to go. £100 in those days was a lot of money, 45 years ago. And I was getting a lot more than I was getting anyway, so I went along for the money. That was 45 years ago. And I've been going every day since. I gained peace of mind. I was able to see things as they are. I was able to handle my problems as they came. I was able to move slowly but irresistibly forward, and each year became a little better than the one that preceded it. You actually reduce the minus factor. When you lose something that you should have and could have won, you don't lose one, you lose two. As an example, say if you were playing golf for $1 a hole and you missed a putt that was a winning putt, you wouldn't lose $1, you'd lose $2. You'd lose the one that you would have collected plus the one you had to pay out. And over a period, that really accumulates. Look, I know there are many formulas to success. I don't know many formulas, I've said before, but I do know that this one works. The Christian faith, that is the formula of the Christian faith. The non-Christian faiths have just as effective formulas built within their faith. But it's all communicating and depending upon an extreme omnipotent power that can give you force, understanding, wisdom, counsel the moment you need it, and then your problems will dissolve before you. What you do actually learn with this formula is the golden rule: do unto others as you will have them do unto you. The wonderful part of this is that because whilst you're doing unto others as you'll have them to do unto you, you're spreading that testimonial idea that I told you earlier, that in 30 days, 1,047,000,000 people will find out an idea if they only told one person a day. But within your circle, you'll get the reputation of being an honest man, a man of integrity. And because of that, many things will happen to you. How many times have you heard people say, he's lucky? The funny thing about luck is that the luckier you are, the luckier you seem to become. I think Matthew in the Gospel said, to whom it is given, more will be given.